something cheaper than salt is a common man. Yeah? The life of a common man is cheaper than the salt per kilo. Becoming very serious, very earnest, and writing stuff and all is important, but it demobilizes people. Art is integral to communication, and our communication is through art, and that's what touches everybody.
Welcome to Express Change, a podcast about art and activism.
Right now, we're treating people and the planet like they're here to serve the economy, when really it should be the other way around. What will it take for us to reimagine and remake our economies to deliver social justice on a healthy planet? We're part of a global movement that's trying to do just that.
There's a popular saying, it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. Our cultural mainstream hardly ever imagines what a different system could look like. We want to find out how new and innovative art can help us change our view on politics, economics, the world, and our fate.
To get to these answers, we'll talk to artists and creatives from a wide range of fields, backgrounds, and parts of the world. I am Marina Gattas, Culture and Public Policy Lead at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, based in São Paulo, Brazil.
And I am Martin Oetting, an artist and writer based in Berlin, Germany. Thank you so much for listening. This is episode 6 of Express Change.
Today, we're here with Pushpanath Krishnamurti. He is a climate activist and a humanitarian who has been walking, literally, on his 2 feet to create awareness about climate justice for years. He is originally from Bengaluru, India, and has spent 3 decades working with organizations such as Oxfam and Save the Children. His first climate walk was from Oxford to Copenhagen to raise awareness on climate change in 2009. And since then, he's walked over 40 million steps. Welcome, Push.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's a great occasion to share the stories of nearly 14 years. I started to walk when I was 59. I'm going to be 72 soon.
First of all, we wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us, in your own words, what is it that you do?
That's a good question. Basically, I'm an anti-poverty campaigner. I was born and brought up in Bengaluru. My father was a very successful coffee businessman. He lost everything. And for some period, he left us. And that made me a very strong street child until I came to college. Basically, the degree in agriculture provided me with an opportunity to work for social banking. That's when I met Oxfam. So Oxfam is working against poverty and suffering. That's what led me to be interactive with communities across the world. And I worked in Africa, Eastern Europe, Vietnam, India, of course. So sometimes I had many opportunities to work directly with communities, not just providing fund. And I'm very much interested as a singer, I'm an artist, I'm a theater person and so on. So I decided to become a campaigner. Because I like interacting with communities, working with them. So talking about change for justice. And that's how I came into climate, because climate impacts the poorest most. Indeed, it's the darkest paradox of our time. The poorest woman who hasn't contributed anything to this climate is paying with her life and her family's life and livelihood. 1% of the richest contributing more than the 66% of the population in terms of carbon footprint. So that's the level of injustice. In 2009, I was working on climate change because Oxfam was not involved in climate discourse until then. They found our work with poorest people is going backwards because there's a change in differential climate. So they were asking whether I will do a popular campaigner global, because I had already done a global popular campaigner on fair and injustice in trade. So that's how I did a lot of climate hearing across the world. That actually changed me. And I like what Gandhi used to say, Mahatma Gandhi, that if you see extreme injustice, you have to do something about yourself. And also I found that Oxfam's work here in UK mostly producing a lot of reports and so on, but not really activating the communities. So I took my break, I took my leave, my holiday, and I decided to walk, because that's what Gandhi did, you know. So walk helps. I'm singing songs. I got the attention of the global people because I was singing in Tamil. In that sense, I think I call myself a regular guy, singing songs and meeting people, collecting stories. I myself have a story sometime. So I'm a storyteller for justice. And climate is the highest form of injustice. So I try to reach out to various people and connect and share, create awareness, mobilize people, and also meet those in power. So I seek truth, speak truth, speak truth to power.
Your story starts with almost a business angle, and then it goes to justice, it goes to Oxfam, and then suddenly art comes in. You're singing and you're a poet and you're telling stories. Can you tell us what role art played in your life, both until you became an activist, but also since then? Like, what does art mean for you, being an artist or thinking in terms of art forms and expressions of art?
I was just thinking, you know, the word activism, A-C-T, is act. We have to act. And that has been in all my life. And I started to work in villages in India in almost in 1973-74. It's contextually you find that you interact with people through storytelling. And Bangalore, where I born, in south of Bangalore, is kind of, if you like, the cusp of creativity. And so as a child, even when I was hungry, I used to do theater because it allowed me to become a prince or a king or so on. So art meant so much to me because it could communicate, and it used to keep me away from hunger too. But it also helped me to tell stories. Yeah. So I said activism, A-C-T, is to act. We have to create a well-being economy, means we have to act to make sure everybody knows what it is and to create that economy. So A, I call it, is for actions. You know, C for creativity, T for transformation. No matter where you work, whatever you do, I think telling stories and creating a connection, which is organic. Storytelling is the way the civilization is built, both in written form, oral form. So for me, it is integral, just like the way we are doing now. I'm telling you a story, my own story. More and more of our conversation on change becomes more and more writing and more intellectualization and so on, all important, but that is what your backup. But it is moved us away from the clear emotions that we come with. If you want emotion, not entertainment alone, but it can be entertaining emotions which actually touches people. So in any conversation, a story is a great start, and it is always contextualized. A well-being economy produces a good policy papers and change, which is necessary. That's a backup. You got to have evidence very clearly. But how do you transmit that evidence?
Can you maybe give us a specific example of what that might look like in the real world? A case where evidence is really, really just the backup, and you're actually using arts as the means to communicate a message, first and foremost.
Mozambique was hit because of very low prices for maize. The farmers were in struggling. Nobody really paying attention for two reasons. One is that there was surplus maize coming from US because there was a drought, and also because US was dumping cheap maize. But the farmers wanted to tell the story that they are suffering. So we choose at that time to go in a train from one part of Mozambique to border of Malawi with a singer, Ali Fak. At each station, he would stop and then he will sing, and the train used to be stopped until he got back into the train. So there was a whole drama of that, and the whole country, and indeed Southern Africa, woke up to that whole issue of trade. So, you know, having Ali Fak and being with Ali Fak was like magic, you know. He's also an albino. And, you know, there's a lot of discrimination albino. Here we were, he was almost treated as God in what he was doing. So it's likewise when I walk, when I sing, and actually translating that to the people whom I meet, whether I walk from London to Glasgow or I'm walking across the western mountains of India. So that's in the sense that art is integral to communication, and our communication is through art. And that's what touches everybody. Becoming very serious, very earnest, and writing stuff and all is important, but it demobilizes people. When you start to write more academically, it becomes low, sometimes jargon-filled, sometimes difficult words. Oxfam produced one of the best document on what is happening in trade. But it was a book like 100 pages. And you have to tell the story, how patent has been stolen, stuff like that. To tell the story, it is set fire in the heart of the people. So you use art to inform, to create awareness, to mobilize. But also use art to mobilize, to change the rules of justice.
So essentially what you're doing is you're organizing events, or you're creating these happenings, I could say, around the issues, around the reports, around the evidence, around the problems. I mean, it kind of reminds me of my time in advertising. Advertisers do this too. They call it event marketing, or they do PR stunts so that people take note of their products. I mean, there it's rather cynical often. And here it's with a purpose, right?
Just a protest march itself is now boring. Nobody sees that. But imagine if somebody does a protest march in a peaceful way, walking backwards, 500 farmers walking backwards, saying that the world is pushing us backward. And I got 500 women holding an empty pot on their head and saying no water and walking backwards. That becomes a story. And indeed, in Brazil, the World Coffee Conference, so at the time of Lula, Lula was very popular, President Lula at that time. So we had the coffee conference and coffee crisis was there. And I came there. I don't speak any Portuguese, but I trained the workers. And we had this black mask on our mouth. And we had this group the night we worked on it and how they should stand, because I'm also trained in theater, in street theater. And indeed, I Augusto Boal, the greatest theater founder of theater from Brazil, I met him. We would suddenly come from nowhere, all in white dress and black mask, have coffee. And as he's coming near, we'll lift our mask and throw the coffee beans up. And that actually set everybody talking about why. And indeed, I found in Brazil, this action set people to talk. What's going on? Why are they throwing coffee? And indeed, I found a lot of Brazilians didn't even know that they were growing coffee in Brazil. Yeah, so that's what I mean. So what is the backup? We had a book written by Oxfam called Mugged, M-U-G-G-E-D. Beautiful book. It tells a whole story. We made summaries of it, translations of it. So backup is there. Authentic research is there. Communication and action is there. Visualization of your thing, you know.
When you speak about evidence as a plan B, to me, that really nicely resonates with the research of the role of evidence itself. We know that people only use evidence to reinforce and confirm what they already think and believe in. And so art can come in as this tool that can shift emotions and, to quote you, set fire to the heart and change our ways of feeling and therefore our ways of thinking. Can you talk about how this can help us in an increasingly polarized world where people are just really shut off and they're not even getting into the same room to talk about things? How can art and that use of emotion help us to connect and be inspired?
If you just look back in history and see that, you know, where transformative things have happened with regards to justice and injustice, and you take example of apartheid, anti-apartheid, you know, the key movers and shakers of that are the singers, you know, Miriam Makeba and so on. Likewise, I've traveled a little bit of Latin America, and I've gone to Colombia, and I've come to, not Mexico per se, but I was in Cancun for a bit. But in the US, of course, I've traveled and talked to people. And, you know, when you start to look at all those peasant movement, everything, all of them are, you know, they are integrated into great songs, great stories. The freedom liberation in India is linked to the greatest songs that Mahatma Gandhi used to like and others who sang. That is a platform on which we are standing. Yeah. So this has now become, okay, we have to now use art. That means something gone wrong, right? We stopped using art because we can't see it as, I don't know, not that valuable. We have to be really vigorous and robust about writing and so on.
Another topic which I know that you're an advocate for is the nonviolent economy. How does that relate to art?
The success of market ideology has become so powerful, it has become a victim of its own success, right? As if this is all written on stone, and it even stops listening to common sense. It's a finite world. This road we have taken is going to annihilate us. But common sense is where it's happening. So what happened in the nonviolent economy, it was a product of another social movement in India called Ekta Parishad, which works with landless and indigenous people. And, you know, recently I was watching something where it says something cheaper than salt is a common man. Yeah. The life of a common man is cheaper than the salt per kilo. So that's what happened. So we were starting to look at, is there, even in that extreme violent, if you like, you know, violent means a violent for conflict for resources, a violent for power and everything. It manifests into some kind of violence, whether it's mind violence, body violence, water struggles and everything else, right? So we wanted to see, is there anything happening within southern India? So the Ekta movement linked to what is called Jai Jagat, which is meaning victory to the world, not victory to India, victory to Britain or so on, the victory to all of us. Then we have to rewrite this concept. So, and to see, are there any efforts made by people? So we took number of people from across the world, traveled South India and so on, looked at many little pockets, little tiny little fires that were going on, of people trying to work towards, not against, towards creating. Yeah, whether how you grow a crop, how do you treat your animal, how do you sell with each other. When I walked 100 miles and nearly 40 degrees, so then we found all these people are doing, we brought them together for what we called an ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-violence. A fair and a conversation and a workshop for 5 days. So that to see when they saw each other, oh God, they are all doing so, they are all interconnecting, and we started to share stories, but we had many workshops and so on. And the non-violent economy movement, we found that the resonance was there everywhere, Mexico, everywhere people are doing those things. A little, little, tiny, little islands of peace and possibilities of a shared planet. There are all these little birds that are trying to become good flowers.
Are there projects that you've worked on where you've been able to inspire people to join this movement of art for activism?
We created a platform called The Beat Continues. Yeah, so people, anybody can do a beat. Actually, Rosemary Mburu, who is the Pan-African health activist, he said, "Push, I never touched a drum." I said, "Go for it." But I never even touched a drum. I said, "You can touch it now and then you can beat it." "Oh, I don't know how to beat." "No, you know how to." And I got the best and the greatest drummers in the world to beat first. And then we made a song, This Way to Win, a song which included artists from Spain, Africa, India, including my son, who is a scientist, and he's also a singer. So they composed a music, and that music became very popular.
I live in prosperity and I'm doing fine, but I look at the world, I look at politics, and I just get so, so depressed. But what you're basically saying and what you're showing is that you can only win the battle if you're happy fighting it. I mean, and fighting a battle is probably even the wrong term to use. It's not about a battle. It's about reaching out to people. It's about the opposite of battle. Maybe the fact that battle is the first word that comes to my mind shows that I'm on the wrong path in my head even. It's not a battle. It's song and dance. It's connecting with people. It's really hard when you are going at it with this sort of analytical brain, and when you're trying to think things through, to find that connection to someone who has such a different opinion or idea of the world than you have yourself. And I think that's where the problem is. It can't be analytical. It needs to be emotional, and it needs to be from the heart and not from the head.
Sometimes you have to keep knocking. As a child, an 11-year-old boy told me, I said, "Can you tell me? I walk all the way and then I reach there in Glasgow. And if they don't allow me, what should I do?" That 11-year-old said, "Stand in front of the door and keep knocking." Yeah, so I said, "God, you know, that's brilliant, man." I was a working child and I come this far only because of others. You know, I got if I didn't have a free education for my degree in agriculture, I'm a city boy, I wouldn't have come this far. We celebrated 50 years after we graduated in 1973. Yeah. So I was saying the same thing. It opened a window. It was a gateway for me. So here we have 50 million girls not able to go to school because of climate impact. Their life is gone. My story was I was carrying a 20 kilo books and everything when I did Copenhagen walk because I heard the story of Judith who couldn't go to school because she has got to go further and collect all firewood and water and so on. I promised Judith in Uganda, I will tell her story to everybody and I'm doing now. And I would give that my backpack to the students whom I talked to and say, this is the weight that Judith was 11. Now she's 24 or something. Yeah, would walk every day because she couldn't go to school. And me, lucky me, I was able to go to school. And because the local state provided money.
Yeah. The connections we can form with people, they'll surprise us often with what they can do. Moving on to our last question, it's one that we like to ask all of our interviewees. If you were to imagine that 2023, the year that's behind us, was a work of art, a painting, a song, a film, a dance, what title would you give it? How would you title the work of art that is 2023?
Wonderful question. In Tamil, you know, the poetry that Uma, my wife, wrote is about Urumai. Urumai is right, Urumai. And Nyayam is justice. Yeah. So that would be for all the poetry. When you have your right, then you get justice. Otherwise, I say for me, the most important song is that about being fearless. உச்சி மீதி வானம் இடிஞ்சு வீழ்கின்ற போதிலும் அச்சமில்லை 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 என்பதே. Even if the big blue sky falls on my forehead, be fearless and fearless and fearless. Because there's everything around us makes us so afraid. From COVID to the economic battering and everything else that's happening around. So we gotta be fearless somehow. And that is a poem wrote by a great radical poet called Bharati in Tamil Nadu during freedom struggle.
I was very fearful today. I did not have a good day. And you telling me that the essence of this work is to be fearless, that's really helpful. I'm grateful and I thank you for it.
It's a long journey, right? Sustainability is a long journey. Truth is a long journey. So it's okay. I mean, we are all flawed in some way, but it's good to accept that I'm flawed.
Thank you for listening. Express Change is supported by the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, the leading collaboration of organizations, alliances, movements, and individuals working to transform the economic system. Find out more at weall.org.
Express Change is produced and edited by Martin Oetting in collaboration with Marina Gattas and the team at the Wellbeing Economy Alliance. You can find out more about my work at martinoetting.com. That's Martin, OETTING.com.